Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
You ever want to read Aragon, but more sexy time?
Stubborn.
Hey, if you like stubborn characters, do I have the book for you? Okay.
Why should people read The Name of the Wind?
Right out of the gate, it's the writing. There we go.
You're looking for the word?
I was looking for one. Like,
what does that mean when people put words on a page?
What can I...
Da, 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 da.
Welcome back all to another Two to Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Today, Rich, we are going to let the hate fill us.
Good.
And then we're going to put it away.
Less good.
Today, Rich and I are going to be talking about 9 books that either Rich or I or both of us hate. You might have seen us review it out there. You might not have. Some of these we have reviewed, some we have not. But the whole point of this, Rich and I have a goal today. Mm-hmm. Of these 9 books that we're going to talk about, we will say, hey, we'll give 10 seconds of how we hated the book, letting you know, did Rich hate it, did I hate it? Then we're going to shut that up after that 10 seconds and then pitch you spoiler-free to get you to read these books. Our goal is by the end, we want you guys to go comment below which book did we convince you to read because we just simped over it and we said all and sung all of its praises. We're not going to lie about the book and say, oh, we're not going to say a book is like this when it's actually not. We're going to be accurate.
It's not a lie. It's just stretching the truth. You know, it's lie by omission. We're going to omit the things we really didn't like about it and actually talk about the stuff that is positive, the things that we could say are good.
The person that would have given it a 5-star. We're going to try to emulate them, the people that do like it, and
we're
try to relate.
We're steel manning this.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do our best on.
I know. You're going to love this.
Oh, I'm always a fan of just the contrarian. I probably... People would call me a contrarian, I think.
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's about right.
I was just being...
I know. Being contrarian. Yep. I got the joke. It's funny.
Okay. Okay. Maybe you know cute. Okay.
But now I get to be a contrarian to myself.
Ah.
So it's a fun perspective.
The ultimate layer of hell right there. Let's start off then. What's the first one we got, Rich?
First one on the list is... The Gardens of the Moon, book one of the Malazan series. And now I know I said Malazan, not Malazan.
It's
off my back. Steven Erickson said that you could say it whatever way you want.
He did? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, neat.
No, he's been asked that question several times. It's like, it's a large place in this world. They've said it multiple ways.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even the peoples in the world.
Yes, they all pronounce it different. So we could say either one.
Good, good.
So, Malazan, which sounds better.
We have reviewed this, and 5-second opinion is Rich and I do not like book one.
Did not like it.
Did not like hate it. I would say I hate the book.
I would say I strongly dislike to hate. I found a tiny nugget of something I could find worthy to read on.
And
that was it.
That's it. And stop that. We love the book.
We love it.
So,
Malazan is such an amazing series. Book one is a necessary read for all fantasy readers. Actually, correction, all serious fantasy readers. All you casuals out there, you don't really deserve it. That's all I have to say. Some people are just built different and deserve Malazan.
Mm.
Others don't. Others don't really they haven't earned it yet.
The value you get out of this book, and this is genuine, because as we're doing this, omitting the stuff we didn't like and really praising the things that this book does do well, I think the reason you're saying that is the world in Malazan and how book one, all spoiler free, by the way, so reemphasizing no spoilers for all this, book one is so complex and there's so much to it, you might read it and be confused, but that's the fun part about Gardens of the Moon and Malazan. There's so much you won't understand reading, like, okay, what is going on here? And that doesn't mean you won't understand the plot, because for me, Rich, for you too, the plot is super comprehensible. It's not a confusing plot.
That's true. The plot itself is not very confusing.
Yeah.
It's very understandable, but also plenty of good twists and turns in there that you don't really see coming.
Yes.
Some pretty magnificent events where you have to pick, you have to piece together on these grand epic scales what is important, what isn't. It's a fun puzzle to put together.
Yes.
And especially characters that... There's also a really fun aspect to it. I think one of the highlights of this story. So I have a couple, but list the highlight for me is how connected the immortal and mortal world is. That there are characters that are deity level and yet are down with the humans having a cocktail party and being able to shoot the shit with regular mortals, and how quippy and fun they can be.
Yeah.
It's a weird perspective to have, and that happens several times, of gods playing like men, men playing like gods, and there's a intermingling confusion to it.
Yeah.
Which makes the world feel a little bit more like Discworld, in the sense of the heavenly realm is not so far out of reach.
And that's a fun aspect. And I think the reason that's in there is Steven Erikson, when he was writing Malazan, it came off of a D&D campaign he and his friends had been building for several decades. Mm-hmm. So he had so much lore to jam-pack into here. And for when we talked about the review, Salty, our admin and friend Salty, he was saying just how you let the book happen to you. Don't overthink it. Don't go into it trying to memorize every word and get the history, because a lot of it will just soak in over time. And I think your point with talking about how it has those similarities with Discworld, kind of the, not that it's whimsical, we don't want to give the wrong impression, this is a whimsical type of story, but it is a...
Sometimes it can be fun,
but...
There's a lot of humor in the book.
Yeah.
A ton, for a supposedly darkish, grimish world. A lot of people die. There's all this horror, war. Are there any really good people in this story? Not so much. It's a little bit gray. There's a lot of humor. There's specifically a character. I'm just going to name drop the character, my favorite character of the book, Kruppa. Kruppa is hilarious. Hilarious character. Actually, his dialogue is incredibly funny.
He's the best character. And there's 40-something of them, so that is saying something. A lot, because he's your favorite of, like, 40-something... No, not just characters, main point of view characters, as in 42... I think it's 42. I don't know why that is.
Ridiculous.
But yeah, he's your favorite.
He's my favorite. He's so funny. There's so many humorous moments in this book that should be really gray, grim, and dark. So if you're going into it expecting just a dour, dark fantasy book, I don't think you're going to get that. And why should you want that? Like, it's good to have a little bit of levity in this.
Yeah.
So, and it was good enough that it made me want to continue to the next book.
You love the book. Not just good enough.
I loved it so much
that
I read book two.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I think that book one is amazing,
five out of five stars,
book two is better.
6 out of 5.
Yeah. So if you were to say, like, hey, why should you read Gardens of the Moon? No matter how, it's great, but it also gets better, which is an important thing to note.
Yes, and I think the first thing you were mentioning here when talking about Gardens of the Moon was the value you get out of it. Of, you need to earn your right to read this book. It gets joked around a lot in the community how Malazan just goes over people's head. It's super confusing, and there's all this to talk about. A big value of it, if you're just curious about storytelling, or if you're a writer, or if you're somebody who has seen the same thing a lot and you're looking for something novel, there's nothing like Gardens of the Moon. I haven't read a book that functions the way it does, that just kind of... You'll be told stories like Stormlight or not so much Lord of the Rings, but it's set about Stormwind that he just throws you off the deep end. You have to start to understand it. What does this mean? There's a prologue, there's a prelude, then a chapter one, and a prep. There's so much.
It throws you off the deep end, but that's for casual. It throws casual fantasy, like, or not even casual fans.
Yeah.
Like, you've never read really an epic fantasy book before. You think Stormlight Archives throwing you off the deep end.
Yeah.
This is actually throwing you off the deep end.
It the most I've ever seen.
Well, also, there's a real value to reading a bunch of these. If you're sitting there reading a bunch of books and going, man, I've read this trope before. Hey, I've seen these things before. Stop hand-holding. I get it.
Yep.
Stop it, where you feel like the author is repeating things over and over to a less observant reader.
Like, they think you're dumb. They're hand-holding you, yeah.
If you think authors are treating you like a dummy, you should definitely try Milhausen.
Yes.
Guards of the Moon.
Even let's say this. You don't even love the book, you will get something out of it. It will not be a waste of time to read.
Definitely.
So, Guardians of the Moon, if you check on Goodreads, has a 3.93, by the way. So, it should be a 5.
Yep,
should be a 5. But that's our Guardians of the Moon pitch.
Fair enough.
Do you have anything else to add on to that before
next? Go ahead and read it. Fantastic book. Necessary read.
Now, next book. Do you want me to introduce this one?
You go ahead.
The Thousand Deaths of Ardor Ben. It has a 3.97 on Goodreads currently, and Rich and I both really didn't like this book.
Really didn't.
Really did not. With that being said, time to pitch the book and see why people do love it, and saying, here's the great aspects about the book. First thing to talk about, the magic system.
Yes.
To get you into this world, the magic system of this, again, very spoiler-free stuff, giving you surface level for this, is dragons ingest materials in this book, and through the materials going through their digestive tract, they then excrete it. So dragon poop, essentially, is how the magic in this world is created. And you get different types of powers depending on what materials go into the dragon. And you say this a lot, Rich, where dragons in fantasy worlds, it's either there's too many dragons, or
there's only two types of fantasy.
There's not enough dragons. The dragons are running out.
Yeah, there's either too many dragons, or not enough dragons.
This world has not enough dragons.
There's never the middle ground if there's just enough dragons.
Never.
I've never read that story.
Never. And this one...
Actually, that's a lie. Titan's Nest.
Oh, there you go.
Titan's Nest has just enough dragons.
A comfortable amount.
A comfortable amount of dragons. Not too many. Not too few.
But what did you think about this magic system in here? And just how inventive it is?
Oh, it's incredibly inventive.
Yeah.
A magic system that... I would say there's so many other stories that they have dragons in there and you've seen it all before. This is definitely unique. They're treated as a real creature rather than just human companion, which you often see when dragons are introduced, either the villain or companion.
Yeah.
This is not. They're treated almost like a special type of cattle, a resource to be used, avoided. Be careful around. I mean, that's a really fun way to use dragons instead of the more standard dragon rider stuff that you see all the time. The process of how the magic is created is also well thought out, and the author really goes into detail on how the different magic systems work in this book, how it's made, how it's used, and definitely by the end has a really cool reveal on the ultimate purpose of why this match system is so important.
Yeah.
That the match system is very important to the plot of the series. And
it's integral to it, yeah.
Piece things together. It's a fun mystery to solve.
And to give you the pitch and the plot of what type of book this is, if you are out there and you read The Lies of Locke Lamora and you're going, I just want another heist type story, witty character who I can get behind again. I want a found family type. I want just fun character who can go around and I think not one for one, but if you like Lies of Locke Lamora, it might be 100% of people who like that might like Thousand Deaths of Ardor Ben. I'll say 95%. Just because if the person doesn't like it out there.
Yeah.
But if.
It's a strong if though.
But if you are you want to scratch that itch of Liza Locke Lamora, you can't find one, read Thousand Deaths of Ardor Ben, because it will scratch that itch.
Also, unlike, so here's a point of comparison.
Yeah.
That if you're reading fantasy and you've read Liza Locke Lamora, and there is a type of romance in there, but it's kind of in the background. It's more of a, it was a motivation, but it's not present in the story itself. And you want a bit more romance in your fantasy heist story.
Mm-hmm.
This one definitely has a more back and forth romance in the story that is more to the forefront. So I would imagine a great pitch for someone is someone who is used to reading romantasy and wants to maybe take another step away from the focused romance to focus more on the fantasy aspect. Well, maybe like this book. It has enough romance, but I wouldn't go so far to say it's a romantasy book.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
There's other fantasy books
it's
where romance,
focus, though.
Romance is not even a factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's romantasy where it is the focus. This is somewhere in between there.
Yeah. And because if I remember correctly, there's three point of views in this book.
Yeah.
The main one, so Ardor Ben is where you get that heist, that Locke Lamora style. There's another character whose name I'm forgetting, starts with an H, but he gives you that history, lore, connecting the pieces for you, and that's a lot of fun. And then your main female protagonist, I'm so bad at the names. Ardor Ben's in the title, so that's easy to remember. But she's a part of the heist crew. And you really do, if you're a character reader, if you kind of want a few cool twists and turns, I think this will do it for a lot of people. You like Ocean's 11, the movie? Read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. Perfect pitch. Go buy the book.
Actually. And again, let us know in the comments which one of these you want to read after these pitches. And let us know if you disagree with us, if you go ahead and read these and be like, hey, how do you guys love these so much?
Yeah.
Or hate these so much.
Or go into YouTube and type the name of that book, plus two to ramble. And
see our actual review.
See our actual thoughts. Yes.
The next one, Rich. Book three. What is the third book we got?
This is one that I've read and you haven't.
Okay.
But I'm going to do my best to pitch this one.
Yep.
There's a lot of complexity to this. So, The Burning White. This is the fifth and final book of the Lightbringer series by Brett Weeks. My actual opinion.
Oh, first of all, you're not going to spoil books 1 through 4.
Nope, but I'm going to be pitching the series, ultimately.
Yep. Yes.
That I will talk briefly about the final book a little bit, but I can't talk about it really without, you know,
spoiling
obviously.
It, because I don't want
There's
to
almost
spoiled
nothing
anything,
I could yeah. say but other than I didn't like the direction that the final book went. Mm-hmm. That the ending for me was ultimately incredibly disappointing to the point that I hated the book. Those are my actual thoughts.
Okay.
In addition, I loved books 1 through 4, actually. Genuinely loved books 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're going to start pitching off of it.
Go for it. So I got a question for you.
Yeah.
You hate book 5. You love book 5.
I love,
you
others,
love book 5. Others
other
hate
people.
It. Other people hate it.
Hate book 5.
No.
Not me. I love it. It's my favorite book. It's my favorite out of the series, really.
But even if somebody does hate the finale that much,
yes,
is it that good of a series where people need to pick it up and read the Lightbringer series?
Definitely. It is a great blend of, so if I would actually state that Lightbringer series is a staple example of what modern fantasy brings to the table. When we hear talks about like, oh, what's class? So when someone releases a book like, Tad Williams released a book, it'd be more apt to say it's an example of classic fantasy versus something like Red Rising is an example of modern sci-fi. For example.
Very fair. Yeah.
I think Brent Weeks, it has the best example of modern fantasy. It brings kick-ass, just kick-ass magic system. It's one of the best I've read, period. It rivals Allomancy from Mistborn. It's close for me.
It rivals poop from Thousand Deaths?
It rivals poop from
no,
Dragon.
Come on, don't pull my chain.
But no, it does rival Allomancy for me. I love I love the magic system there.
Yep.
The world itself is very inventive, but for the most part, you are focused. So a lot of classic fantasy can kind of get a little bit broad in the history.
Okay.
This focuses on a certain location, focuses on character-first storytelling instead of going a little bit too broad. This one also has some great twists and turns that the modern genre tends to bring of like really fun mystery and twists. So another great example. So it's hard for me to talk about this without spoiling it, but the best part about it is it follows some standard tropes, but turns them on their head in a great way. I'll try and give the main character. I don't think this is too much of a spoiler in the sense of I'm describing the main character, how he is early on in the first book. Mm-hmm. So if you don't even want to hear that, all right, skip ahead a little bit to the next chapter. But main character, who is our protagonist, is a really, really fat kid. Or I guess not really, really, really fat, but obese. Mm-hmm. Actually described that way, and doesn't immediately, like, through how you would normally expect something like this to happen, of, you know, magic, you know, they get their new magic powers and they suddenly are ripped and they're super strong now. And you kind of like Spider-Man from the Sam Raimi
stuff,
where, you know, he gets bitten by the spider, he wakes up with abs. It's like, oh my God, well, I'm going to continue on to work now. Nothing like that.
Okay.
He is very overweight. It is a problem and it stays with him. It's not something he immediately can just work himself off and he overcomes these difficulties. It's a genuine difficulty. He keeps running into problems from it, and he has to come up with creative solutions. He also uses his disadvantage of his weight in as an advantage for fighting, of, as I think a lot of people could assume, weight is very important in fighting. Like, if you weigh more than your opponent, often you do have a significant advantage over him. That's why weight class exists. He uses that.
Yep.
So he uses his obesity along with magic to actually overcome certain challenges.
Very cool.
But then changes over time. I think his main character is very interesting. Beyond that, you also have... you have that as your standard character that has unique challenges you get to go through. Mm-hmm. You also have unreliable characters that you have to piece together the mysteries that they bring.
Ah.
Very, very fun. Man,
should we review this on the channel? You're going to need to want to read this.
It honestly is. Like, books 1-4. Like,
And five
yes. Are amazing.
Get in the line, Richard. You do content for... we do content. This is all fake. Come on. Okay. But actually,
book one. Genuinely great series to read.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot the one of the best aspects of it. Nearly forgot this.
The villain. Yeah.
The antagonist. This is your
favorite
series,
villain ever, isn't it?
It's up there. Like my top 5 antagonists. Come in on now. Fantasy.
Come on now.
So good. One, because Brent Weeks, I think, does a great job with his banter back and forth in his dialogue. It makes the villain so much more fun and intimidating.
Nice.
And the villain does have teeth. Like, actually does some messed up stuff personally to our main character, but then not in the grand sort of way. There's personal beef between them, but then they also have to work together sometimes.
Ooh.
They're an antagonist, not a villain.
Okay.
That's why they're good. Like, it's not your, you know, Professor Snape type deal where he's like he's mean, but ultimately they have to work together sometimes. Like, I don't know. It's kind of weak sauce to me. This one, oh no, he does some messed up stuff to our main character, and yet our main character still has to work.
But Snape's, together. There was,
I understand.
Yep.
I like this more.
Oh, okay.
It's all I want.
But there's more
say.
To Snape than that. Let's just be clear. Yeah.
I get it. This is better.
Snape's pretty. Okay. Okay.
I'm just saying.
You know, I'll hold judgment till I read it. So
yeah.
So that's book 5 of Lightbringer. But the series as a whole.
The Burning White.
Really good.
In addition, I do think if you read it with a certain open mind, it will be very enjoyable ending. I will hold my tongue after that.
Okay, fantastic. That is your pitch. That's your 5-star for the whole series, all the way through book 5.
All the way through.
And yep. Do you want to go on to book 4 here?
Let's do it.
Book 4 is Neuromancer by William Gibson. Real opinion from me is I hate the book.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
To the point, I don't know if I'd say loved,
But I really like it.
I really like it. I like the book a lot.
So I'll do more of the vouching for this one.
Yeah.
For Neuromancer.
You're going to have to talk more about this because I'll be too honest.
And actually, for Neuromancer 2, we are book club on Patreon. Go ahead, join our Patreon in the description below if you want to. For most of these books, we've reviewed these with the patrons. This was one of our monthly book clubs, as was Thousand Deaths of Arderman, as was Gardens of the Moon. So we read most of these books because of the Patreon and the book club. But
we're pretty good at picking books we want to read ourselves that we'll like.
Sometimes the patrons force us to read these books which we love.
Which we love. Is this just a slight dig at our patron members of making us read books we don't like to read?
Just going off the, look at all the stuff you made.
There's a lot of book club books on this list. Actually, there actually are.
No, half of them are, I think.
Half of them are half book of the, club
about
books.
About 4 to 5 of them are.
Ooh. Is that a good picture?
I don't know. So Neuromancer, it has a 3.89 on Goodreads. And so I do hate it, but here's why the aspects I love and why I do love the book in some ways. Okay. So Neuromancer, if you liked the movie The Matrix and you like cyberpunk, this is daddy cyberpunk. William Gibson's Neuromancer is what spawned the subgenre in the first place. The Matrix, the movie, got inspiration from this. This came out around the time Blade Runner did as well. William Gibson was actually writing this book while Blade Runner was released, and he went, damn it, someone beat me to it in visual form. But he wrote the book and really did spawn the subgenre. So if you like a cynical vibes, gothic, and an oppressive technocratic type of feel with sci-fi stuff where this was written in the 80s, so the terms that are used back then, he coined some of the terms, and not specifically in this book, but he wrote articles. He coined the term cyberspace. That was right?
Yeah.
So at the very least, this is a historical book to read where it goes, oh my God. So he coined the term. He has these concepts in the 80s that you look at today's cyberpunk stories and you can look at, okay, I see how they got the inspiration from how this spawned really the subgenre.
It is actually very prolific in the sense of this was written before the internet really had its mainstay. And yet he got a lot of things creepily right. Like, he had a really good grasp of how the internet would affect people in terms of social media. Like, that's very, I think, a very strong message to come out of this is, how does the internet affect humans socially? And this book goes into it before it was even a thing. So it's a fun perspective to see, kind of an outside in looking at it. It's one thing to hear someone today talk about how social media affects you. It's another thing of someone who's never even seen social media. How does it affect you?
The main character Case in this point, and this is why my favorite parts about the book are the world and the message for this, where the main character Case is essentially addicted to the Matrix.
Yeah.
And needs to be hooked up to the Matrix and kind of has this. At the beginning of the book starts where Case is closed off from the Matrix. The Matrix being the cyberspace, as you can kind of imagine what the Matrix is. So William Gibson uses it in a way to explain the internet's,
the digital world.
Ethereal world, but not even digital world, but it puts your, would you describe it, not hologram-esque, but how would you say he uses the Matrix? It's not like you're just playing a video game, but I guess think Matrix the movie. You're hooking yourself up and joining this virtual world.
Your consciousness interacting in the digital world. You don't assume that it's not your a 3D avatar working in digital space. It's just
your mind consciousness is hooked up
to the internet.
Yes. So if those concepts get you and you are a cyberpunk fan, like, you have to read this book. It's got a lot to offer. I would say similar to Gardens of the Moon, even if you would hate this book, even if you wouldn't like it, worth the read if you're just a big reader who is going, hey, again, I want to see where this came from. I want to see how the books I'm reading today were inspired by books in the past.
Definitely, if you've seen the Netflix TV show Cyberpunk Edgerunners, this is, if you really like that show, read Neuromancer. A lot of the themes of what makes you human, can human merging with technology, can that go too far? That's tackled here. The the future of AI. What are the consequences of AI and man meeting? Will man become obsolete when AI reaches the singularity? This book goes into it. Then also the cyclical nature of what happens when history basically stops. There nothing changes anymore. You've reached the end of history.
Go read this book. Go read it. And it sounded like you really liked it there, actually. That sounded genuine.
I do really like it.
No, love it.
But I love it. It's my favorite book ever.
So that's Neuromancer. Now you want to go into our fifth book we have here to pitch.
Yep. Our actual opinions.
People waited for this one, I think. So they actual did. Opinions on this. Actual opinions. What is this book, Rich?
The Name of the Wind.
By who? Who's that by? Patty? Patty Rowe?
Patty Rufus.
Patty Rufus.
Patty Rufus.
Patrick Doofus for now. But so, what do you think about the book?
I hated it.
I hated it too.
I read it once.
Mm-hmm.
Hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Kept telling people, like, I really hate it. We've been going for like 2 years on this podcast. Like, oh, what's your hot book controversy take? It's like, I hate Name of the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, going, eh, it can't be that bad, can it? And then we read it again for the book club, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I read it a second time.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it more accurately now. It wasn't a fluke. I really dislike it.
Since our review, I've hated it more. I'm down to 1.5 stars on the book.
Oof.
And it might be going lower. But for right now.
Well, we love the book.
Love the book.
We now love the book.
Love the book. And why should people read The Name of the Wind?
Right out of the gate, it's the writing. There we go.
You're looking for the word?
I was looking for one. Like,
what does that mean when people put words on a page?
I was more confused of like, what can I say that I like?
No, yeah, okay. Actually, the writing.
The writing. Specifically, yep. And this is, like, I love the book, but this is like really, really true. It has one of the best scenes I've ever read in a book, period, in it. Some of Patrick Rothfuss's writing when it comes to describing how music is told, how it's
experienced, yeah,
is second to none. By far, he has that on lock. And it's beautiful. Brought a tear to my eye. I wish there was more of that in this book. But what we got was so amazing that it's a 5-star.
Yes.
Other than specifically that scene, what are some stuff that you really enjoyed about this book?
I was surprised because you talked about the writing beforehand, but I really enjoyed the world. The world is lovely, and he spent, I think, a total 14 years before getting that book up. He was 7 years of writing the book. He mentions out of the book itself that he had 5 different currencies or something crazy. But what's actually packaged in the book is a cool history. There are tales that will be told in several chapters about some of the mythos or some of the fables that some people believe, some don't in the world about these. Is it called the Chandrian? Is the Chandrian are a big part of this book. But if you kind of like that Tolkien-esque storytelling where it takes a moment aside and then goes, hey, here's one of the tales that people tell in this world. And it has to do with the themes of the book, which is storytelling itself. One of the themes it gets at in The Name of the Wind is how you are who you tell yourself you are and how stories have impact, and the whole entire narrative of this book is a frame narrative where the main character Quoth is telling a story of his younger self and his story of how he became who he is today, which is a king killer, because it's called the King Killer Chronicles. This is mentioned first several chapters of the book where, hey,
it's on the front of the book.
Front of the book. It's the King Killer Chronicles. And it's his story of how he got there. And if you kind of like, I would say Harry Potter, Will of the Many, Empire of Silence. Reason I say those three is the first two, Harry Potter and Will of the Many, it's an academia trope. So if you like kid going to school, seeing how he interacts with other students and the professors and magic and how's all that work, and the magic system sympathy in this book is really freaking cool.
It's really cool.
It's a hard magic system that is intricately explained that you can see exactly how it's applied. There's rules to it, and it's a lot of fun.
But like a lot of great worlds, he also has a more ethereal, soft magic system as well. So a lot of great series now have, like, they don't just have a hard magic system. They have a hard magic system, which is what you mostly deal with. And then you have the soft magic system kind of outside of it that is more of a mystery, and it's got the allure. This one definitely has it with the idea of naming things, which ties into the story of you are what you tell yourself you are. That the stories of your life, or the stories that you tell yourself, are what you become. And along with that, the importance of names, that if you know the name of something, you have control over it. And so that's part of their more soft magic system here, which is really interesting. Like, the name of the book is The Name of the Wind. Mm-hmm. Quoth trying to discover what the name of the wind is and what power, control, and what mysteries that unlock. Very interesting. And on my second read through, I missed a lot of the importance of the world. I really enjoyed the world on the second read through.
Very nice.
Genuinely, I definitely saw an improvement in that aspect for me. So very much enjoyed that. What about the characters for you?
I love the characters. I love them so much. Like, what do you mean? Like, what is there to say?
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Okay, so want me to take this one, Rich?
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so the main character, Quoth.
Yeah.
What makes him a fantastic character is, have you ever read a book and you just wanted to root for somebody, wanted somewhat of a self-insert? You just wanted somebody, you're reading an academia book, and sometimes your main character isn't always meant to be somebody that embraces their flaws or looks at flaws. Sometimes you want to self-insert okay.
You want a tap out button?
No, I got one
tap
thing.
Tap me in?
I got one thing to say.
Tap me in?
Go ahead. Yeah, what?
If you want a character that you can pretend to be for a while, because everyone has felt that situation of life is unfair to you. And in a world where everyone is against you and that you feel like you've done everything right, you've done everything you could, you've brought your best, and sometimes the world just tells you no. I know plenty of people that feel that way, of the world's out to get them. That's what Quoth is. Quoth is intelligent, kind, caring individual that's smarter than all the rest, but ultimately is in a world that's out to get him, because he's so smart, intelligent, talented. So, if you want that type of story to see, you know, the world is out to get this out to persecute this undeserving man.
I got another question for you then.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Would you say the book handled, how would you say it's 5 stars and how it handles dragons and how the story handles its plot?
Yeah, easy. Name of the Wind does a great job of, I know you're going to laugh, but humanizing dragons. Oftentimes, fantasy goes out of the way and making dragons this kind of mythical figure. Mm. It's fun to see dragons in this more mundane light.
Right.
Of integrate them more into, because if dragons were this like epic, awesome, bombastic creature, they would destroy things. Like, how could that fit into a more civilized world that right. exists? In this case, they show how dragons are just creatures. Mm. And how does that integrate into this world a lot cleaner than some other stories would be? In the yeah. same way of Ardor Ben gives you the more utility of a dragon as a type of creature to farm, farm resources. In this case, it's more of a creature to avoid, but ultimately a fairly harmless creature.
Yeah, that's very well said.
Yeah.
And because Quoth is such an academic and curious, we learn a bit about the dragons, how it exactly functions. And
we do. We do learn a bit about the dragons.
Well, that was a great pitch, I think.
Yeah.
So go read Name of the Wind. We love it.
Yeah. I sure love Name of the Wind.
Next book.
Next book.
Next book. What is this next one, Rich?
This one's one of mine.
Yeah.
This is going to be a bit spicy for you, but I really hated Iron Gold from the Red Rising series. Really didn't. I had a nugget in there that I kind of liked, and I really hated everything else. Mm. Those are my actual opinions. I'm going to need your assist here to help me out with pitching it.
I'll let you be. I'm going to ask questions. Let you yeah. say why you love it. But I will say this is my least favorite Red Rising book. My actual opinion is I was very disappointed by it. Dark Age floored me. Golden Age floored me. Red Rising, you all know. Come on. I'm book one from the start. Loved it.
Yeah.
Iron Gold really disappointed me. I probably like it slightly more than you.
Probably.
Honest opinions. Yeah. But why we love Iron Gold.
Why we love Iron Gold.
So why do you love the book? And so, also, this is book four in the series. We will not be spoiling again. So there's the trilogy. This is the book.
I think it's unavoidable for us to talk about this book without spoiling the first three books in the Red Rising series.
So for you'll see the chapter mark here. Skip about 5 to 7 minutes.
Skip to the next chapter mark.
To the next chapter mark if you don't want spoilers for the first three books of Red Rising.
I will not spoil book four, but...
So up to Red Rising through Morningstar.
Existing yeah. kind of spoils.
That's very true. So through Morningstar, skip 5 to 10 minutes, you'll see the chapter marker.
All right.
Yep. Okay.
You've been warned. Now, off to a great start. You're right off the back of the amazing, awesome series of Red Rising. That's not a lie, by the way. I actually like this series.
Fuck yeah.
People keep trying to make me a hater. Anyway, after the trilogy of Red Rising, interesting story. We're left with the question of, is Darrow of Lycos, the Reaper of Mars, is he a builder or is he only a destroyer? And Iron Gold, we get to see a little bit of an answer to that question. We get to see the start to answer that exact question. What has Darrow done with him and... help me out with her name.
Mustang Virginia.
Mustang Virginia's rule. Mm-hmm. How is their society any different? What have they built after their war? And we get to see the world's not looking so hot. Things are in chaos. Some of it is not their fault. Some of it seems to be that it is their fault. Mm-hmm. We get a new cast of characters where we now get new perspectives. Before, it was just Darrow. Now we have we get to share the page time with Darrow and several other different POV characters to bring a different perspective of the Red Rising universe. A complaint that I actually had a little bit of in the first trilogy is how much focus there is on the golds and how there's such an interesting color cast system that I would like to explore. We don't get to see much of how the blues operate. We don't get to see how much the pinks, the grays, like... they are considerably background characters where we're just spending time with the Ubermenches of the Golds. Now we actually get perspectives from a genuine red, like someone who's not a red that turned gold, but like a red. We get perspective of a gray. We get perspective of a purple, blue. Like we get to see how the other colors live their lives.
Obsidian.
Obsidian. Yep. Not purple. Yep. Obsidian. Yep. Thank you. Which genuinely fascinating. You get to... this book opens up the world of Red Rising in a way the first trilogy does not.
Right.
Very good. Then we also get to see a little bit of a... we get to see our heroes tested, if they're now the ones in power, are should they be the ones in power? Mm. And is another revolution justified?
Mm.
So it was really easy in the first trilogy to say, like, hey, look, you know, Loon definitely needs to be overthrown. And now we get to see our own empress of, hey, there's a bit more challenges. There's more challenges when it comes to ruling a galactic empire.
It feels a lot more epic.
Yes.
So Red Rising is fast paced, but also just Arrow. And you just having multiple perspectives, it being not just on, not because I know after Red Rising, books 2 and 3 got outside of Mars, but this has more locations you go to. I think something maybe you would like about it as well is there's more consequences.
Sure.
That's
definitely.
So yes, they won the initial stage one of the war, but then I guess this is a big thing to mention. This takes place a decade, 10 years after the end of Morningstar of the first trilogy. And so they've been in a 10-year war now with the Golds on, I think it's Mercury or where.
Mercury and Venus.
And Venus at the time. Yes. Yeah.
And they win against. They finally do the.
Well, slow it on that. Yeah. So they are still fighting Golds. It's been 10 years now. And the political state right now is Dancer from the original trilogy and other people kind of want to find peace in this war because it's been a decade now. We have our planet. We have Mars. We have the moon. Let's stop here and call for peace while Darrow and others want to end this war quickly.
Well, they want a final solution to the war.
Essentially, they want to end it now so that it's been a decade. Let's go. Let's attack while other people in the system want to find peace with the Golds. Whereas then Darrow and others are saying they won't fight for peace. They're just going to attack us anyway. So there's the back and forth political intrigue, and then you have your Darrow, but a more aged and grizzled Darrow who isn't just your own kid anymore. So I think some people who, maybe if you had complaints about him as a protagonist in the first trilogy, there's more to like here. And maybe for you, what a big aspect of this, at the very least, to be the world was more interesting to you than the original trilogy? Was the world more, not just grand, but felt more immersive?
Definitely. The world was more immersive, more interesting than what we got previously. We definitely have it's fun reading a series where you've read the history. Like the previous trilogy is the history of this world. Right. That's pretty fun to be able to see new characters and how they react to the history of their world.
Yes.
Where you get to see perspectives on different characters, how they look at Darrow of Lycos and the stories and legends they hear about him from over 10 years previous. That's pretty fun. That's a pretty fun thing to see in a story and how it evolves. So that's certainly enjoyable. The action here, definitely fun. Pierce Brown's always top of his game when it comes to action. So you definitely have that action-packed story. Can't say that.
Let's end it there. Let's end the spoiler there. Skip to the next thought. Don't even try. No. Don't make poor Nick like do another.
I can't lie.
Oh, you're gonna say something about it.
I was gonna say it's fast paced. It's not fast paced.
It's slower paced. But hey, if you like a slow burn, no, that's a positive thing.
That can be a positive thing.
Yes,
if it's slow burn. Yes. And not boring.
Right.
Which other people say, not me.
Of course.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say slow burn.
Yes. But that is Iron Gold, book 4 of Red Rising. So if anybody's jumping back in now, those spoilers are done.
Yep.
And we will get to our 7th book here on the list, which is
The Eye of the World.
You all knew it was coming at some point, right? The Eye of the World, book 1 of Wheel of Time. Honest opinion, Rich, what is your honest opinion of book 1?
I liked it. But it's definitely the least, I like it the least out of all of the Wheel of Time books. But I generally think it's fine.
So the Iron Gold portion is my least favorite of one of my favorite series. This is your least favorite of one of your favorite series. Had to happen, right?
Had to happen.
Eye of the World, I obviously don't like it at all. And we had our review. You could check our Iron Gold and Eye of the World review. Most of these books we have. But Eye of the World, why do I love it?
Yes.
Why do you love it?
Let's start with you.
Start with me.
You're the one to pitch it because that's the challenge.
Here's a great thing. There's when you look at a book and you can see some similarities, sometimes it can come across as tropish and imitative. In the case of The Eye of the World, it emulates and takes inspiration from Tolkien. And if you really liked Lord of the Rings, if you just really like that classic fantasy feel, Eye of the World is not your Molasses Gardens Moon throws you in off the deep end. No, this is your classic story. Farm boy Rand starts off the story, and you can immediately get behind it and immediately grasp that, okay, there's a darkness in this world. There's a good versus evil, and you are going to follow a band of people from this town that is a slow burn in the best possible way. Like a slow burn in that you will have a band of characters, Rand, Perrin, and Matt and Nynaeve, and Egwene, just this group of characters who you get to know immediately, and you will be on a journey for them for the rest of the series. It can kind of feel like home because you're going to be following these characters, you're going to grow up with them, and there's so many books in the series. You like the first book, there's more to love afterwards. And even for me that loved the first book, it doesn't get worse. Some people say there's a slog, but it's fine.
Genuinely, though, the slog's not real. Anyone has told you that there's a slog? Fake news.
Completely agreed. Completely agreed.
Yeah.
So I think the big thing with Eye of the World is it's giving you that taste of familiarity with new band of characters. I guess the biggest thing to talk about in book one, it sets up a lot of the pieces, which you'll see come in later books, but the world building is next to none. The cultures in the Wheel of Time, the different peoples, the span you go through across the world, and you just get a little snippet of this in book one, but it is next to none because you will not find another fantasy series like it.
This is a classic fantasy story that takes a more modern approach. Basically, Robert Jordan, and this is in the back of the books of one of his interviews, and it's said multiple times in the audiobook series, so this is not super deep cut information, but Robert Jordan talks about how The Eye of the World is, what if I did the Fellowship of the Ring, how would I think it actually would go? Because the Fellowship generally is, people are very positive and trying, like, humanity, the side of good, really comes together to defeat evil. And a lot of different sides are, for the most part, pretty hopeful in the sense of people were willing to work together for a common good. Wheel of Time makes that question of, like, hey, just because you're on the side of good doesn't mean you all agree with what the good is. Also, misinformation could, like, nobody has all the correct information. So someone could technically be on the side of the light, but because they've been fed misinformation and all these different false lies, whatever it is, that they ultimately end up helping the side of evil. So that is the world that you're kind of set into of, if everyone was truthful, honest, and information was readily available, the series would be like 3 books long. But because humans be dumb, humans be, you know, greedy, conniving, selfish,
stubborn. Hey, if you like stubborn characters, do I have the book for you? Okay.
Genuinely though?
Yeah.
On one hand, stubbornness is a flaw. And then the other, heroic bravery can look a lot like stubbornness. They're just too stubborn to back down from a fight. Mm. And that's why they look brave.
Mm.
So that's kind of fun, too. You see, like, a character that's just being a really stubborn heel for a lot of the book. And then when their time comes to shine, they're also stubborn against the villain. And you're like, yeah.
And you can root for them.
Good. Yeah. Like, you just go, of course they wouldn't back down. They don't back down from their friends. Why would they back down from their enemies at this point? It's fun.
Because you get to see the back and forth between the friends and the small romances that are just an aside and kind of a levity to the more serious.
Yeah, the romance dark. Here is the point of levity. For the story, that it's more cute and fun of, haha, men and women are different, and also they act completely different, they don't understand each other, and ultimately one of the themes of the story is men and women don't understand each other well. They see the world through different lenses, and the best case scenario is when men and women actually work together. Mm-hmm. And how do they overcome those challenges?
And that always helps when you have characters you love and can root for.
Yep.
Some people will say it's not Randall Thor, it's Blandell Boar. I wouldn't say that ever. But a lot of people can get behind these characters. And even if you don't like Rand, for example, throughout these books, there's so many characters you get to deeply know that you can find somebody that you can get behind.
Specifically with book one, I would say the highlight character for people to really root for and get behind is Perrin. A reason why you really like him is because of the magic system that's kind of following him. In the Wheel of Time, there's a couple magic systems. There's a lot. Some are hard magic. Others are soft. Perrin has this weird mystery soft magic system of
wolf stuff.
Wolf stuff.
Something with
dreams
wolves.
And things. It's don't want to get spoilers, but it is fun. And it's a mystery to solve. And definitely a hint of danger and fear comes along with it. There's some consequences. Even early on in book one of like going, okay, there's not all upside to this. There's a real danger when it comes to using these gifts and powers. And that's the case for all the magic systems. But the magic system is so much fun to be in this world.
Go read Eye of the World.
Go read Eye of the World.
Love Eye of the World. What is book eight, Rich?
Book eight is ACOTAR.
A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Court of Thorns and Roses.
Oh. So what are your actual opinions on ACOTAR?
I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like it. But I think I like it slightly more than you. Because we were comparing different books, and I think I hate this one less than the other.
Yeah, I think... So we had a fun video on this. I love doing it. I went in, and I hope you went in with the proper expectations.
Oh, I did. You helped. You helped so much. Your pitch and describing the book to me made me like the book a lot more.
I'm glad. Because when we talk about something like Name of the Wind that we hate, love. But when we talk about a book like that, we hear so many amazing things. We go, oh my God, so this is your fantasy book. This is not just a classic. This is a staple of the era of what fantasy means. And so you go into it with these expectations, hate it, right?
Yeah.
I think even if I was to compare ACOTAR and Name of the Wind, I hate Name of the Wind. I would still say Name of the Wind's probably better than ACOTAR. Like on some level, but I still hate Name of the Wind more. You get what I mean? With ACOTAR, I give a lot of leniency because it's in a genre I don't know.
It's reaching back to the C.S.
Lewis. Yeah,
the C.S. Lewis video we did on criticizing. You have to be able to show examples of things you like in that genre for you to be able to properly critique it.
Right.
Ultimately, we haven't come across a romanticy book that we actually like, which makes our criticism of it less valuable in general.
So like, we'll just be fun with it. Yeah.
We had fun with it. We can talk our opinions, but ultimately, out of all of our opinions of it, I don't think you should take our opinion too seriously on romanticy overall.
But you said something incorrect there.
Hmm.
You said we don't love any romanticy.
That's true.
Because we do love ACOTAR.
We actually love ACOTAR. We also love something else.
Yes, but we do love A Court of Thorns and Roses. I don't know why you said that.
I must slip my mind. Okay. Talk to the hypothetical.
Hypothetical, but ACOTAR. Why do we love ACOTAR?
Mainly, when I read, you know, Beauty and the Beast, or I watched when I watched the Disney Beauty and the Beast, I was thinking to myself, hey, what if Beauty and the Beast was not made by Disney, but made by HBO?
Oh, that's always good. Yeah. Oh,
that's kind of what we're getting here.
Okay.
It's a bit more spicy, a little bit more fun. Yeah. You get a character who is Belle in Beauty and the Beast, in the Disney one, is very much your like, she's very book read, she's super smart, she's super pretty, she's super kind, no real flaws to her at all.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get Feyre. You get a real character with some flaws that you can actually get behind. Of she is kind, but generally she has an edge to her. She also can't read. Not very book smart. Opposite of Belle. Belle is a bookworm.
Mm-hmm.
Feyre is not.
Right.
And that raises some challenges for her. She has real things to overcome.
Real flaws.
She has real flaws. Mm. She has to overcome this deep burning hatred in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
for the better virtue of love.
Fantastic.
Wonderful story on hate to love.
Yes, and learning to love you, who you think your enemies are. Because this is in the land of Fae. There's fairies here, and these Fae have the history of this world. Starts from the get-go, very interesting, where the Fae worlds have basically taken all of the land except they've sequestered humans to a small colony on the southern edge of the continent. But they have taken so much of it, and they just let the humans live down there, but they're so powerful and have such magic powers that the humans are nothing to these fairies and these fae. So there's all these mystical and questions about who the fae are, who's talked to the fae, how evil are they, and our character Feyre, close to fairy, Feyre, but you know, besides the point, Feyre, our main character Feyre, kind of gets intertwined in the first act of this book of going to those fae lands, and so you get to explore what is it like. There's these different courts. If you like your, I think we've used Harry Potter a lot. I'm going to do it once more and say, are you a Hufflepuff? Are you a Gryffindor? A Slytherin?
Very much the BuzzFeed question for ACOTAR fans is,
which court?
What court are you?
Yeah.
Would you be in the autumn court or the winter court? What would you say? What court are you in?
I forget what the courts are.
It's the seasons.
That's it?
Yeah. Pick a season. That's the court.
Honestly, I'm a fall guy.
Same.
Ugh.
I would say I'm in the autumn court.
I knew I'd choose you correctly.
Yeah.
This is good. Oh, since you're in the autumn court, let's go.
Yeah.
And
see,
by the way,
that we're friends because we're both
in the autumn court.
We're both in the autumn court.
Yes.
We can list off our, our star signs match. It's great.
So, yes, that is ACOTAR. Anything else to add on ACOTAR? Classic. I am so excited to talk about it for that. I just slammed the mic. Another addition, maybe to toss your way. What do you think about ACOTAR as a romantasy book? It was our first romantasy book. You think it's a good first?
Oh, definitely.
I think you got to, right?
As far as romantasy, for like, you've never read a romantasy book before, this is definitely a good place to start.
Yeah.
It's the height of TikTok at one point. I don't think it's...
Probably not right now, but...
Not now, but
If you want to be relevant, read ACOTAR. Let's say this. I'll give you two examples. So if you're a male and, you want to... You want to be like, oh, I read this book so I can talk about it in conversation. And I'm at the bar, I'll be like, yeah, I read ACOTAR.
Make you more masculine and cool.
Exactly. It's you could strong man. Just be like, yeah, I read ACOTAR for the vibes, one thing you could do. And then if you're a female as well, it's a genre that maybe just isn't for us and you just like it to begin with. Because I know my girlfriend, for example, I thought it would be for her. She actually didn't like it. She actually loved it. This is why we love the book.
She loved it so much.
She loved it so much. Yes. But I think it was actually interesting for Rich and I, who are epic fantasy sci-fi nerds, to read something so outside our genre to kind of be like, okay, this is
also reading a book that is just so much more popular than the books that we typically read.
Yes.
Way more people have read this than Stormlight.
Respect,
by a wide margin.
Very wide margin.
And Stormlight is like the pinnacle in our genre of like popularity. Other than Lord of the Rings. But modern fantasy stuff, that's about as high as you go. Stormlight. Mm. And ACOTAR blows it out of the water.
Our circle just isn't, we're not in the romanticy circle. But, could you guess what our male to female audience is for this podcast?
The thing is, we're higher than some. Like, YouTube already is a male-centric space, generally.
But also, us being dudes, us talking fantasy sci-fi, skews it
again, yeah.
So, with that context.
7%?
Female?
7% female?
13.
Ooh.
To fluctuate, sometimes up to 15.
That's pretty high.
Some of our videos get up to, like, 50% if we're talking ACOTAR or something like that. Fair. But month to month, 28-day period, we're at an 87-13% ratio.
Thing is, that's actually really high for YouTube. I said 7% because I've seen other channels where it's like they had 5%, 7%.
We have over 1 in 10. That's pretty cool.
That's impressive.
That's pretty cool.
We're really pandering. We're doing our best.
So that is ACOTAR, and that's our pitch for it.
Yeah. Go ahead and read it.
Go ahead and read it. And we have one last book to pitch.
Fourth Wing.
Fourth Wing.
I hated this more than Austin, I think. I hated this more than ACOTAR, actually.
I think I liked ACOTAR more. I still did not love... didn't like Fourth Wing.
There are things... It's a two-pronged thing.
Two-pronged?
I hated the romance more in this one. Bothered me more. I also hated the fantasy side of this book more than... It's weird. It pissed me off in different ways.
Okay.
I can understand arguments of like it being better than ACOTAR, but I still hated it more.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But that's all stuff I've heard someone else say. I love Fourth Wing.
Let's gush.
5 stars.
Let's gush.
We're going to gush about it. We're going to pitch it. You guys definitely got to read it. Here you go. You ever want to read Aragon, but more sexy time? There you go.
That's a good
piece of pitch. It's sexy Aragon. That's what you're getting. Is it about much more? No, but in actuality, a great pitch for this is for people who are in the romanticy genre or are in the romance genre of reading, and they want to take a toe dip into the fantasy side of books. But they still want their romance to be kind of front and center. They want a great enemies to lovers trope. Mm-hmm. I know that's an incredibly popular trope. That's forefront here. You get a great idea of, you know, your female protagonist having, you know, two male leads, one romantic choice being the guy that stands in front of you to protect you. And then you have your other male lead that stands side by side that wants to protect you, but trusts you enough to protect yourself. So is willing to stand there with you as a partner rather than just a protector that doesn't trust you. Apparently that's what people like.
Respect.
That's the thing. You want a lover who respects you enough. And often that's what the idea of enemies to lovers trope is. An enemy has to respect you because an enemy considers you a combatant. There's an element of respect when it comes from an enemy because they fear you to some degree. So when it turns enemies to lovers, it goes from a place of respect into a place of love. So
well said. Well said. Yeah.
You definitely get a lot of that here.
I know one of your sayings as well is, if you guys see our merch, it's democracy is cringe, as Rich is saying. Mm-hmm. Democracy also sells. Fourth Wing is so popular and so massive. I think of all these books, ACOTAR actually might be more because it's had more time. Yeah. But Fourth Wing, we went to a convention in DC. It was the National Book Fest or something. Yeah. And the line for Rebecca Yarros's Fourth Wing has such a massive storm of fans. So if you out there want to dabble in a romanticy, I know we just pitched ACOTAR, but maybe Fourth Wing is, I think, the best one to do to get. Do you actually like romanticy? Even though your real opinions, fake opinions you said before, when it comes to the fantasy plus romance aspect, I think it perfectly gives you a mix of sexy time, as in you get a couple sex scenes that are graphic. And if that's your thing, you are about to be.
I do want to clarify.
Yep.
That we have been told.
Oh, yes.
For us, they were very graphic. Mm-hmm. For the rest of romance genre, it's very tame.
They said 3 out of 5.
That's what they said. I saw comments were saying like this is a 1 or a 2. This is basic entry level smut.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it gets smuttier. Mm. This was tame.
So, that with a grain of salt because it'll differ depending on how sensitive you are to sex scenes, I guess. And that for us, it was graphic.
This is not the book to listen on audiobook. In a speaker in your home with children.
That's it. That's headphone, the line.
Headphones only, yes. Or physical book.
Or if you're brave enough in public. If you're brave
on
enough.
Speaker.
Yeah. So the fantasy elements of this, though, with the dragons have a specific bond with their riders and link up with it. Each rider gets a specific gets a specific magic, gets a specific ability from their dragon based on their flaws, wants, and needs as a character as well. So it's cool and it's intertwined with the types of personalities get their different type of ability, and some range from really powerful and some are way less powerful, and there's some consequences of that. It's got a great mix of, I think, why this is taking the world by storm. It has that mix of getting you that spice, having your enemies to love or your tropes, but also having the fantasy elements and the dragons and a lot of those big name things that are just done really effectively in the book to pull of has a super wide appeal.
Definitely a lot to theorize about and question when you get to imagine yourself in there, like, hey, what wing, what faction would I be a part of? Mm-hmm. Then you also get like, oh, what were the powers that I would have? What are my flaws, wants, needs that a power would definitely help with? You get to theory craft about the future of the world. What are the lies being told in the system and what's going to be, unveiled? Bunch of stuff for people to think about and question. If you watch the Fantasy Fangirls, they have episodes, hours and hours, theory crafting about these books, talking about all the small Easter eggs and details that is later explained in future books.
Yep.
Definitely lots of details there to uncover.
That's Fourth Wing, everybody. And that concludes our 9 books that we think you should all read.
Yeah. Comment down below which one you actually are going to go out there and buy and read. Which one did we do the best job at pitching? Which one did we do the worst at pitching?
Yeah, I'm very curious.
Yeah.
Let us all know what you think. And Rich, to give you your final say here, what do you think of all these books that we just talked about? After talking about them, do you love any of them an ounce more from just kind of saying the positive qualities? Or do you think the same?
The Thousand Deaths of Artur Benn.
Ah.
Look back at it a little bit more fondly.
Neat.
Yeah. I like the dragon poo.
Dragon poo. Yeah. I think that's one thing we learned today.
Yeah. Dragon poo is cool.
Can I say one thing that I hate more after talking here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Name of the Wind. I think it's just lowered. Yeah.
It's just every time
I say the name.
Every time it comes out of my mouth.
Yeah.
It drops lower.
It's uncanny. But
it's really hard for me to allow you to have a lower score of Name of the Wind.
Right now, mine's 1.5. Are you going lower?
I think mine's higher than yours. That's ridiculous.
Yours is 1.75?
I think so.
Nope, you're going to have to lower those numbers, bud.
Oh, that's rough.
I think that's the lowest I'm going because I still have to think about the pros and the world and why I love the book so much.
All right.
What do you all think? Let us know in the comments below, and maybe we'll do another similar video about books that disappointed us that maybe we want to pitch or books we love that we have to trash.
Possibly. Let us know what you think. All right.
See you all next episode.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.